Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Black Hoodie Alchemy. I am your host, Anthony Tyler, and I am here with my friend AP Strange, a Fortean investigator, flying saucer enthusiast, pretty badass musician as well, just very multifaceted artist and researcher. This is our first official conversation. We've had some back and forth, and he's always well equipped with some sort of interesting current news. He's really good at finding niche topics in that traditional Fortean sense. And you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who have maybe heard the term Fortean, maybe on this show, maybe not. More likely you're familiar with the types of things that it encompasses, but not so much with the word. We'll get into that a little more. Mr. AP Strange, you can find him at apstrange.com, where he has musings about bad horror movies and old school sci-fi and interesting unexplainable phenomena. And you can find his podcast. It is The Eternal Void, but with jazz. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Nice. Yep, all right. Well, welcome to the show, Mr. AP Strange. How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me. I was telling you before we started that it's the Fortean phenomena, Fortean investigation, the definition in and of itself is something that you can toss around, and you could give a brief contextual definition, but you really need enough room to stretch your legs to try and wrap your head around what it all entails. Because like I said, I think most people, you know, most people have heard of something Fortean, whether it be like John Keel or Mothman or just Art Bell and Coast to Coast. But if you wouldn't mind, if you could get into like what Fortean investigation, you know, Charles Fort, in any variety of detail that you would like to.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, it goes back to Charles Hoy Fort, who is the author of the Book of the Damned, among other books, Low and Wild Talents. So that's kind of, that's kind of the beginning of it all with in regards to ways of looking at basically reality in the world, but more specifically the unexplainable or unexplained events of the world. So, the impetus for the Book of the Damned was in part Fort's failure as a fiction writer, but also his annoyance at the like arrogance of people that seem to think they have it all figured out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he spent countless hours at the New York Public Library combing through old science journals and magazines and books and tomes of recorded things that happened, and the ones that did were outliers and didn't seem to fit with the model of science as it was understood at the time were what he referred to as damned facts and evidence. They were just, you know, they were condemned to forever be in the margins of these science journals as something that wasn't satisfactorily explained, but more commonly brushed away, right?
Right.
So, so I mean, the basis of Fortean thinking, which of course Fort himself was resistant to his ideas becoming like an ideology, because Forteanism is also is almost anti-ideology, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you agree with that or not, but
I would absolutely agree with it, and that's why I always liked Fort. You know, not to get too high-minded about it, but I don't know, in a way it for me it's kind of reminiscent of Plato and the philosopher king, like someone that is fit to not rule but spearhead a mindset, if you will, someone who is fit to do that doesn't want to, and the people that do want to are usually not fit to. So I respect Fort's counterculture. Doesn't he have some sort of quote where he says that any group of people that are looking to follow him is not a group that he would want to be a part of?
Well, I mean, that's the old Groucho Marx line, actually.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely that mentality, though. Yeah, up with Fort. Yeah.
When the Fortean Society began, I think that's the name of it. Now I'm questioning it, but there was.
I think you're right.
Right. They invited him, and he didn't want to join.
See, and I love that. Yeah, because I'm pretty. Even when I find myself drawn to schools of thought or mindsets, I'm hesitant to say I am this. Instead, I say I'm inspired by, you know, among other things. But if there's anything I could say that I feel most comfortable saying that I am, is probably a Fortean. But even there, you know, it's all. You are just what you are, and you're interested in what you're interested in. And I think there's something to be said about pigeonholing yourself. So that's a really great way to preface the conversation, is kind of in that Buddhist sense. The more we pigeonhole the idea of what it means to be a 4T, and the more we're kind of losing some of it in a way. And so you could keep that in mind, but we also have to kind of grab the bull by the horns if we want to understand what we're talking about here. But you're right. 14 phenomena, just an empirical approach to unexplainable phenomena, not even trying to understand how it's happening so much as it is just saying, hey, this has happened. And unless we can come up with a better, you know, a good explanation, this is some stuff that we're going to have to figure out at some point.
Right. And I mean, I think one thing that a lot of people miss about Fort is a sense of humor too.
Yes. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Down to his writing style being a bit, well, idiosyncratic is kind of an understatement with Fort, but with, you know, some might go as far as to say he wasn't a very good writer, but he had a sense of humor. Like there's a very,
yes, he did. I'm
just joking, right? So,
and there's a sense of humor with like the phenomena itself. One could argue as well. Like inherently there's this surrealist quality where, in the sense that surrealism is kind of a wink and a nod to your, you know, your gauges of reality itself. And Fortean phenomena is just kind of by definition, that sort of wink and a nod to, hey, you don't really understand what reality even is. Go ahead.
The term surrealism comes from super realism. You know, that's how they developed that as a term. It's the reality that extends beyond our perceptual reality and encompasses it.
Yeah. And that is a great, that actually reminds me of the whole, Goblin universe motif there. Right. Which I think is, I guess it's like, kind of a goes back to, I didn't think I'd be talking about Plato so much this conversation, but like the Platonic ideals and Neoplatonism in a way, like what do you think is the root? So Fortean phenomena, if it's the umbrella term for anything sort of unexplainable, and we could pick that apart more as we go along, what do you think we're looking at here overall? Like is there a unifying theory to most of it? Is it all just compartmentalized into its own subjects, or how do you look at that?
I mean, I think it's human nature to want to categorize and refine and put everything into like some kind of Linnaeus system of you know, slapping Latin names on things and making it seem like we have some kind of idea of what's going on. Encyclopedic listing about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have plenty of books like that that I adore. I love having them around, and terminology is helpful, but is there a unifying theory behind it? And I think there is, and I think that it would be, the ultimate answer is so beyond our comprehension that, you know, guessing at it is just you know, stabbing in the dark. Thinking about this earlier today, I was thinking, there is a quote from, I believe, a physicist, but I failed to track down the quote, the attribution of the quote, but it was I think many people have said some variation of this, that reality is not only as weird as we like weirder than we think, is weirder than we have the capability to think.
Yeah, very
Which
well
is
said.
to say, like, reality is so weird that we don't even have a context for how weird it is, because we'd have to be outside our perceptual reality already to understand the ultimate weirdness.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. Yeah, the weird, the strange, and the humorous at times. Fortean phenomena sort of encapsulates a lot of different things that you don't find together elsewhere. And so what would you say that UFOs are perhaps the most near and dear to your heart?
It ends up being the one I talk about the most, I think.
Is that
Which,
because people think to ask you about it, or because you gravitate towards it so much, or maybe a little bit of both?
I think I have the most fun with it,
Cool.
honestly. And it's like in recent years that people have really tried to suck the joy out of ufology as much as possible.
Yeah, tell me about it, man. Yeah. And you've witnessed a much larger scope than I have in terms of like the evolution of these communities like ufology. Would you mind going into that a little bit? Like just to what got you into UFOs? Have you seen any? What do you think of the state of affairs today and how it's progressed or degressed?
Well, it's more of the same kind of as it's always been. Like, everything comes around again. It's all cyclical. It's funny because, like, of the couple questions you asked me, it kind of all dovetails nicely, because when I was younger, I mean, my interest in a lot of this stuff began with my own paranormal experiences with poltergeist activity and visitations and stuff like that. So as a young kid, I was reading about parapsychology and ghosts and hauntings and all that kind of stuff. But naturally, like, all these things end up in the same books, like the Reader's Digest collection, Mysteries of the Unexplained. My mom had a copy of that lying around, so
Nice.
became like my reference point for a lot of the ghost stuff I was looking into. But then I'm looking at spontaneous human combustion and demonic possession and weird coincidences and cryptozoology. So, like, being a kid and loving dinosaurs, like, naturally a lot of kids of my generation did. I imagine that's still a thing, but
Oh, yeah.
Machilia and the Loch Ness Monster were like two huge inspirations to me, because, like, even as a kid, I had doubts that they could exist, but really wanted them to. So it's kind of funny, because at that time, so this is, I was younger in the 90s by the time I was seeking out more books about this stuff, like in my preteens and teen years. And ufology was kind of boring back then. I mean, things were so dominated by government conspiracies, Roswell, and well, I mean, those two things mainly. Everything was always Roswell, and the X-Files was on, which I was a huge fan of. But UFOs to me just kind of like, oh, abductions, that was the other thing. So government conspiracies, abductions, and Roswell was all of ufology, as far as I could tell.
Right, and cattle mutilations.
That too, yeah.
Yeah, but not a whole lot of like meat, a lot of weird odds and ends.
But a lot of nuts and bolts, really. So
Yeah.
it was a heavily nuts and bolts era of ufology. I mean, I guess you could, because the only other examples were like Heaven's Gate, so
Right,
people
true.
stayed far away from any kind of more woo interpretations of UFOs, I think in part because of that. So, I mean, growing up, UFOs weren't my biggest interest. I did like them in the stew of all the weird things I was all about, but it's really been in more recent Well, I mean, the last 10, 20 years that I discovered, like, the contactees and the whole history of it. That's, you have these times where ufology becomes fun, and then you have times where it becomes not so fun. And usually it's a mix of both.
Right, right. Understandable. Of the more traditional at this point UFO, whether it be contactee or just like experiencer names, you know, like Whitley Strieber, Travis Walton, people like that, like Betty and Barney Hill. Which ones hold most weight to you?
Of experiencers?
Yeah, like the stories, because, you know, it these things are on a case by case basis, truly. And I do think while there's clearly some traditional UFOs in the sky, whatever they are, you can't trust everyone who talks about them. So what are the ones that ring most genuine to you out of all the stories you've heard that you would recommend other people look into?
Oh. Well, I have a hard time with that because, like, I've had weird stuff happen to me, right? And I have friends that tell me the stories of what happened to them that I believe wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes somebody will tell me something that maybe at a different point in my life, I wouldn't have believed them at all. And I would have just humored them. But at this point, like, I don't really feel like I have room to doubt people entirely. I wouldn't discard anybody's experience 100%, because I think even if it's entirely made up or entirely hallucinatory or delusion based, it's still an experience, right? So I would get into this where I'm a big fan of hoaxers. I actually really enjoy hoaxers. Not really the grifters. I don't like the grifters. If they're making money off of it or hurting people in the process, then that's not good. But
yeah, I can relate to that. I get what you mean, where almost in that Andy Kaufman-esque sort of way, there's an art and even at least usually a sense of humor to what a hoax. But then someone who's like a huckster or a snake oil salesman or a grifter, that's a different story. And sometimes the wires get crossed, but anyway, absolutely. keep going. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah. No, I mean, all of it's so complicated, right?
Like, yeah.
People are complicated, and it's really hard to say, well, this person has a 100% reliable story. Or this person is, like, you know, 100% fake, you know, like it's hard to say one way or another. Mostly what I can say about anybody's experience is, from what they tell me, well, something happened, right?
Absolutely.
It's not nothing, right? So when you get into the contactees, the stories often just get weirder, right? One of the examples that I like to use and has become more popular in recent years is Joe Simonton and the pancakes from outer space, where, you know, flying saucer lands in his backyard and the occupants come out that just look like Italian guys, I think he described them as, ask him for some water, and then they make him some pancakes and then leave,
right? Oh, that was in Eagle River, Wisconsin, wasn't it?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that story because I grew up outside of Anchorage, Alaska, in Eagle River, Alaska, so I thought that was fun. That's a great example, though. Just strange questions the fabric of reality, and for what, a punchline about pancakes made by who? We have no idea. But
also, why would you make that up,
right? Totally. Absolutely. I completely agree.
I think Buck Nelson is very similar. He was like another contactee that got taken on a ride to the moon and then Venus, as written in his book, which is called like My Journey to the Moon and Then Venus.
Awesome. And title.
Flying saucer occupants have a big dog named Bo.
Wow.
And these stories are so wacky that you just wonder why somebody would just make that up, right? Like, why would they? Like, what?
Absolutely. That reminds me of good old Indrid Cold. Who is the guy that traveled with Indrid Cold? Do you remember his name?
Woody Derenberger.
There you go. Yeah. That's a strange story. It's if anyone knows Fortean phenomena, you've probably heard this at least a couple times, but that's a hell of a story. If you wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit, if you're interested.
Well, sure. I mean, his initial encounter with Indrid Cold is just like on a road outside of, you know, civilized areas, like a backcountry road. And Indrid Cold landed in a spaceship that was, it was some weird shape. It was shaped like a stovepipe or something like that. And he gets out and they have like this odd telepathic conversation. And that story, like, it has elements of like Men in Black kind of stories, and mm-hmm. it happened in and around Point Pleasant area. So it's connected with like the Mothman stories. But Darenberger later went on to talk about how Indrid Cold comes back and he gets to meet Cold's sons, Carl Ardo and there's another one. I can't remember his name now, but they go to the planet Lanulos.
Yeah. I forgot about that name. Yeah. I always thought that was a fun name.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have all these, like, you know, 50s sci-fi elements that are involved with the storytelling, and they're so grandiose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. This kind of ventures further from Fortiana in a way, because it's not just a report of something that begs more explanation. It's just kind of anecdotal or storytelling.
And true.
Modern myth-making, really. You know,
yeah. Now, let's see. You mentioned hallucination, and this is always the fine line that I'm fascinated with poking and prodding. The like, how much of a difference is there between these things and hallucination? And try to keep this as untangled as possible here, but like, you know, you of all people know well that, whether or not we know what's happening, there's a whole lot of different instances throughout all sorts of different fields of observation where we can see like seemingly non-physical things have very physical interactions, whether it be poltergeists or, you know, whatever else, hauntings. So it definitely seems possible that something like a UFO or a lot of Fortean phenomena, you know, whether it be cryptozoology or otherwise, could be this sort of whatever it is, you know, if it's piggybacking off of a Jungian projection process or what have you. What do you think is going on there? Like the line or the role that something like hallucinations or schizophrenia, altered states of consciousness, what is the role that all that plays in Fortiana?
Well, you have to be very careful talking about these things, because, I mean, I would preface it by saying that if you're experiencing what you think are hallucinations, you should see a medical professional, right?
Absolutely.
Foremost, because there is the danger of, like, making this a one-to-one equation and then feeding people's delusional beliefs, which, you know, that falls under the header of hurting people, right? So
right. 100%.
Don't want to do that. So, but no, I mean, it's interesting because really one of my personal experiences that I don't think I've told before on a show, because I've always chickened out whenever I thought about it, was I used to have hallucinations sometimes. In my younger years, it was, you know, I was diagnosed with various disorders and had medication that I had to take. And I was smoking a hell of a lot of weed when I was younger. And I wasn't, you know, hallucinations weren't foreign to me. But I kind of learned to accept them over time. And I would sometimes see people walking down the street or in the middle of the street that I knew weren't there. So,
wow.
This one night I was working at a cafe, closed the cafe with my friend who worked with me. And we were going to go to a bar, but we wanted to take the long way over there. And you know, smoke a bit before we got there. We went around this like this crazy back road that kind of looks over the city, and there's a woman standing kind of in the road, like not quite in the middle of the road, but kind of just enough in the road that she's, you know, in danger of being hit. And I could see her very clearly. She could see she was wearing like a polka dotted dress, and her hair looked wet, even though it wasn't raining out. And she had her head dipped forward a little bit, looking up at us. And we come around this corner, and my buddy swerves around her. And it took like a second for that marble to drop in my brain, where I was like, wait, he swerved around my hallucination.
Wow.
So he reacted right away. He's like, damn. He's like, I could have hit her. Why was she in the road? And I'm like, she's not really there, you know?
Wow.
So he pulls over right away and turns around and comes back. And like I said, this is a road that's elevated high above the city. It's just got a big, it's got like a guardrail along the edge and a fence so that people don't topple off of it. Mm-hmm. But there's nowhere to go from where she was. And nobody was there.
Wow.
So I'm just like, oh, maybe the road phantoms are a little bit real.
Yeah.
Around, I had a friend that worked at a gas station in the city, and he said that he would sometimes see him, and another friend that would sometimes see him, and I was like, all right, well, I guess road phantoms might be a thing, right? Like,
yeah,
or I could be hallucinating, and simultaneously there are also road phantoms, right?
Yeah, see, man, it that's the real catch of the whole thing is, once you try and dive into like the ontology of this stuff, it's just so tangled. You know, where do you separate any of this? Like, you laid it all out really well. And I think it's great. You know, it's what I do all the time to kind of arm wrestle these questions a little bit, and, you know, intellectual exercise and whatnot, but having your mentality or your emotions or your point of view in life, like your quality of life, I guess I would say, tied to these things is very dangerous ultimately. Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, I'm just kind of rambling. I think that's an interesting point to make, where some people kind of replace this stuff with spirituality. And I do think that in the same way that, you know, hallucinations, etc., that can also, and usually does in some way, bleed into spirituality, at least historically. I mean, we could see the parallels in all this here, but
not to, because it's an affront to your concept of reality, right?
Right, right.
I think, but that's the reason people get scared a lot of the time, is because it challenges what their preconception was.
Do you think, as I've kind of come to the opinion at this point, and I don't know, it could be like an unnecessarily staunch line in the sand drawn, maybe, but I think that the UFOs, and we'll come up to the break here soon, and we'll mix it up a little bit, but like UFOs and the idea of the extraterrestrial, it seems something like has this sort of hermetic trickster element to it, where I think that it's dangerous to, in that trickster sense, to, well, I guess Heaven's Gate being a great example. Like, I think these things sort of occupy an archetypal seat in our subconscious mind that if you idolize it too much, it just kind of throws you off kilter potentially. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a solid point, but, you're talking about becoming obsessed with UFOs, because classically that's not good for one's health.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much the easiest way you could break it down. And you could take it further and say like people actually worshiping and UFO cults and stuff. But at its most base point, just the idea of the obsession that comes with the, whether it be paranoia from people, you know, government following you, or just the obsessive need to know the truth, etc. Yeah. You find that so much.
That's how I characterize a lot of what's happened since 2017, is the end goal of disclosure with a capital D is the goal that's ever, you know, always coming tomorrow, but never quite there. You know, it's a form of monomania. You know, it's like a white whale for all the newbie rookie UFO people that prefer the term UAP. And like Ahab, it can be like your undoing. You know, like
That's a mic drop. Yeah. The whole UFO community, ufology in and of itself, like it seems like now more than ever with the mainstream media attention is really chasing Moby Dick out there.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, we're going to go. That's great. We're going to go into a brief commercial break. I'm here with AP Strange on Black Hoodie Alchemy. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Brief the law.
I am the thunder, I'm every single drop of rain, I'm the hunger, I'm every single ounce of pain, I'm the tides, saltwater ocean, foreign wide, I'm hard to find, in your face, in front of your eyes, I'm war, I'm peace, gas is stripped at the Middle East, I'm the feast, biblical famine, I am the beast, I'm the cure, the savior, of that you'll be sure, I'm the pure lack of confidence inside the unsure, all things at all times, I'm no one at all, I'm your first kiss, I'm just another kid in the hall, I'm traffic tickets, I'm a kid with asthma, swimming, I'm bad nutrition, bullet holes in your madam's linen, I'm bloods of Crips, I'm the blood on your kicks, I'm underworld politics, entertaining your kids, I'm hip-hop, golden age, free shows with no pay, I'm young, I'm old, I live forever, die in a day, yes I am that I am, yes I am that I am, yes I am that I am, yes I am, at the crossroads I am that yeah. I am.
I'm the rope in the quicksand that stops you from sinking. I'm a cold glass of water the morning after you're drinking. I'm the words that emerge from the tip of the ink pen. I'm the thought bubble that shows the world what you're thinking. I'm the music, the madness, the melody, the comic, the tragedy, the misdemeanor, and the felony. I'm the secret recipe. I'm a split for the freshest weed. I'm fate, I'm hate, I'm destiny. I'm love, I'm drugs, I'm nerd, I'm thug. I'm known to lace my trees with raid because my brain is bugged. I'm a mastodon connecting with Babylon. Fuck with me and I am cracking jaws. I'm the bastard cause. I'm the one telling you to pass the bong. I am a recorded, mixed, and newly mastered song. I'm the speakers that you blast them on. Whack rappers, I'm coming after y'all.
Yes, I am. I am that I am. Yes, I am. I am that I am. Yes, I am. I am that I am. Yes, I am. At the crossroads, I am that I am.
I just wanted to give it to you.
Thousands of people are having paranormal experiences with ghosts, demons, shadow people, dogmen, Bigfoot, and more. Their stories need to be told, and they are being told. Dark Waters, the renowned storyteller, invites you to join at IamDarkWaters.com. For just a few dollars a month, you can listen to some of the most hair-raising and compelling stories on the planet. You'll have access to real-life stories told by Dark Waters. Thousands of hours of content. Their encounters are being told and told by the best at IamDarkWaters.com. Listen to stories like The Rabbit Man, The Dogman Encounter in Silas, Alabama, The Man with No Face, The Other Woman, A Day Ahead of the Devil, Dogman Murder in Hurricane Ida, even a story of someone trying to kill a dogman. Louisiana water demon stories. Sign up today and become a member at IamDarkWaters.com. That's IamDarkWaters.com.
Musicians experience a lot of frustration with music marketing and promotion. They have no idea how to get their music heard, and they're spending hours sending emails, making phone calls, and hitting up their friends to promote them. With our industry-powered digital marketing platform, we can set up your media plan in minutes. Our team will automatically distribute your music across all the best channels, so you can focus on actually making the music. Submit your music today on our website at mymusicpromoter.com. That's mymusicpromoter.com.
Listen, as we explore the mysteries of the universe, the unknown, high strangeness, consciousness, and our human potential, Lighting the Void is an eclectic program that strives to ignite the late night with stimulating conversations. Join us on The Fringe FM.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is still the same show, in case you got confused there. I'm sitting here with AP Strange, Fortean Investigator, and definitely multifaceted artist in general. You can go check out some of his music that I really dug. It was like some Fortean bluesy, good stuff. Cowboy Matt Hopewell, check that out on YouTube. But we were talking about UFOs and Fortean phenomena. That was a nice little bow that we had on the conversation there at the end before the break. You said that ufology is kind of chasing the proverbial Moby Dick right now. So I want to talk to you about some other stuff as well. What are some of the most compelling things about Fortean Investigation, topics, other than UFOs that you're most interested in? Do you have any preferences?
Not really. I mean, my favorites are generally the weirdest of the weird. So any story that combines elements of multiple different unexplained phenomena, you know, the ones that aren't easy to put in one box, right? Those are always the most interesting to me.
I want to throw, speaking of which, on that, in that exact vein of thought there, what do you think about some of these odds and ends that I've always found like just so left field and just kind of head scratching? Like, for instance, what do you think of the cattle mutilations?
There's a lot there. I mean,
there is, and I don't know what to make of it.
It's all very strange.
Yeah.
I think that the approach to it has classically been a bit reductionist. You know, like, there was a quote that I came across at one point, one of the early cases, where a cattle rancher had said that it had to have been aliens from space or the government, because nobody else would do something so weird and seemingly pointless, you know? And then the other culprit that always got brought up was some kind of cult ritual. Like some satanic cult was going out and doing it, right?
None of them make any more sense than the other.
None of them do, right? They're all nonsense. I mean, and to me, I always kind of feel like the ETH is that way as well. Because whenever you say UFOs, everybody thinks aliens from outer space. And that's not what that means necessarily.
Absolutely.
But it's now the implied meaning. So like and likewise, the government. The government is an incredibly ambiguous term. If we're talking about like a government, like what are we talking about? Which branch? Which,
no kidding.
Right. So with cattle mutilations themselves, I don't know. It's something very, very strange. You can take like take all the facts and realize that, you know, there's never footprints around them. That kind of rules out people being there. So it's almost like they've been dropped from the sky, I guess, is the main thing. The examination is the part that's more of interest to me. So I've been digging into some vampire lore lately. I was joking the other day that I've been meaning to start a new career as a vampire hunter.
Just move to New Orleans, man. You'll find a lot of them.
Oh, Alicia that said the Count of Saint Germain was a vampire and he was living in New Orleans or something like that.
No shit, man. Yeah. Yeah, I love the weird vampire lore you find just steeped in New Orleans. That's an interesting place. But please continue wherever you were going.
So blood is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big clue. So I think that when we're talking about things having a variation on their levels of material existence, whether it's something that's just ephemeral or doesn't quite exist in a material plane as we understand it, but can also at other times be, then maybe blood is sort of one of those keys, one of those things that can help make that happen.
Yeah. So
I have entertained the theory that there are invisible, non-corporeal things that can become more solid by taking blood.
Yeah, I mean, amidst everything, the vast context of this whole conversation, that seems perfectly, that seems like a no crazier than any of the other theories. Like, I like it. You see, just anyone else out there, I'm definitely not expecting either of us to pin down any answers in this conversation, but that's yeah, absolutely. That's great food for thought though. And if for anyone that's unfamiliar with the cattle mutilations, go check that out. It's just a weird rabbit hole. And on the checklist, what about black helicopters, man? What was people's deal with that in the 90s? Everyone was really obsessed with that, like in this circle.
Yeah, I mean, and that was tangential to the cattle mutilations, you know.
Right.
Often seen in the same, because I mean they were apparently silent, unmarked, which, you know, helicopters, I think helicopter technology has come a long way since then, but back in the 90s, like, you would definitely hear a helicopter.
Oh yeah,
they're pretty loud. Like silent black helicopters was just kind of, and it also, like, the black triangle UFO was,
mm-hmm.
was at the time, right? Or becoming more common. So they were almost just like phantom-like symbols of the paranoia of that era.
That's probably, if there was any sort of reasonable, especially like Jungian interpretation of it, definitely seems to be like an emblem of the paranoia of the era.
And I mean, I would recommend anybody find works by Jim Keith and look at those, because that's 90s paranoia, really just kind of in a nutshell boiled down, but also kind of he always seemed to just get you right to the brink of the worst kinds of 90s paranoia.
Jim Keith was an interesting guy right there. I would definitely recommend people include Jim Keith in their Fortean rabbit holes. And
The Masters of the Illuminati the other day just for like something to read in a couple hours, because it's really short, you know. Like,
how was it? It's been a long time since I've looked through that one.
Right. Yeah, it was the same for me, and it holds up. I'd say it holds up. It's you know, pretty crazy stuff. The addition that I have is pretty cool though, because it also includes like a presentation that he gave, like the abstract from a presentation that he gave at a conference about basically what I was talking about earlier, which was nice to read somebody else kind of, you know, having these thoughts before. I've already come to accept that nothing I can think of is going to be my own thought.
Right. I feel you there.
About the nature of reality, basically, that we kind of create our own reality. And, I don't know that I agree with his assessment entirely, and he does get some things wrong sometimes, but I think he goes very wrong with things, especially when dealing with the occult. I think he gives some occultists more power than maybe they had, but.
Oh, I see. Like, we don't need to go down Jim Keith rabbit hole, but it's good food for thought there.
I recommend the books. They are entertaining at the very least.
Yeah. What about, you mentioned spontaneous combustion earlier. What are your thoughts on that? that's another just weird outlier head scratcher that seems to have consistent food for thought.
As a kid, it was a huge fear of mine. Worried that I was going to burst into flames someday.
Oh, man. And it does seem, well, I mean, that's kind of the debate, but it does seem to happen, right? What are your thoughts on that ultimately?
Yeah, I mean, it is unexplained, and people have tried to put forth theories about how it could happen, right? So there was the wick theory. I think they called it that, mm-hmm. where if you were to start a fire on a fatty body, then the fat would kind of boil through the fabric and it would eventually burn hot enough to incinerate somebody. I think the more mysterious part about spontaneous human combustion is that generally if somebody bursts into flame in the room that they're in, the room itself isn't consumed with flame.
Yeah.
So if the fire was hot enough to reduce bones and everything else to ash, but not scorch the curtains that were 2 feet away.
Not even scorch the bed sometimes that they burned in.
Right.
Yeah. What the hell is going on there? I have no idea, man. I've looked into it a little bit in the past, and it's just one of those things where it's like, all right, well, there's documentation of like aftermath of whatever this is, call it spontaneous combustion. And it seems like, you know, that's, you know, as good of a definition as we can get. Like, it seems like they just light on fire out of nowhere. And it's, how would you even, I don't know, man. I don't know. Is it paranormal or what? How would you even light a fire inside yourself? Is that like some circuits misfiring in the body, some bioelectrical shit that we have no idea about? It's crazy to think about.
Chemical reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Coke and Mentos in the stomach.
Yeah. I used to think that when I was younger, like maybe some weird chemical reaction just causes like, you know, a gas eruption and somewhere in your organs and starts inside and works its way out, you know? It's improbable, but it seems to have actually happened before.
Yeah, another one of my favorite weird things, this if nothing else or just kind of a mention, is the accounts that you find, because I think there's more than one account in the Book of the Damned of raining frogs and other animals and things.
Yep.
Yeah. What is your assessment of that right there? Is that just mythology or what?
Oh, no, it's documented. I had that happened kind of close to me in Leicester, Massachusetts.
What?
In the 1950s. There's a documented case of that.
Where they just a giant mass of them swept up in the winds and thrown back down or what? That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people attribute it to frog migration and say that, you know, there would be rain with maybe some hail in it and the frogs would start migrating at the same time. And it kind of gives the illusion that the frogs are falling with the rain. and then when people kind of look around, they see frogs everywhere. They're like, they must have fallen out of the sky. That doesn't sound too crazy to me, you know? Because, I mean, the thing is, the human mind is pretty easily tricked. So part of being a 14, I think, or at least the way I like to approach things, is that I do balance it with logic.
Yeah.
Because I'll either entertain the craziest explanation for something or I can like fish through my bag for the most mundane explanation. Because there's usually one available. There's one that's kind of there. When you're talking about like cattle mutilation or spontaneous human combustion, it becomes way more difficult. I mean, often the human mind can be very easily tricked, and anybody studying a little bit of sleight of hand or stage magic can attest to that, you know?
No doubt.
Like I have, and I've realized that some tricks are so mind-bendingly simple and so effective. Like the fact that it's effective at all makes no sense at all to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you read how a trick is done with, like, say, cards, sometimes you're just like, there's no way that would fool somebody. I must have missed something in the directions here. That wouldn't work, but it does. So, yeah. But to go further than that with what we were talking about earlier, it's a lot of ancient cultures, like the ancient Hindu and Buddhist peoples already recognize that what we see and what we hear and what we perceive as being real is just an illusion anyway. So, where it's just illusions of projected in and around other illusions.
Yeah.
Kind of takes the wind out of the sails of it, but
Well, with all that in mind, because I can very much relate to you on everything you just said in terms of gauging all these things. Excuse me. And you've brought up some of your experiences, and just for people out there, if you wouldn't mind, go into whatever sort of detail you'd like, just a little more about, I don't know, how these things, how pursuing your interests in these things kind of helped you contextualize your own life and maybe some of the things that you found difficult about it, because this is sort of a calling. You know, no one really, unless you're a true grifter, you don't really get into this stuff for any sort of gain, other than honestly, just other than maybe passion and like the love of a good story, you want to find some sort of contentment, you know, like even if you're not looking for the ultimate answers to the mysteries, you'd like to wrap your head around some of the mysteries that way, you know, that could you could live a more informed life. So I don't know, whatever you'd like to enlighten the listeners on your experiences, Mr. Strange.
See, that's what ends up happening is when I get on these shows, I end up telling the same stories over and over. But the long and short of it is that I grew up in a house that was built in 1779, and it's easy to believe that a place like that is haunted. But I did experience a lot of kind of spooky things there when I was younger. The story that I end up telling every time I'm on a show is the I had a pair of luminous entities just kind of at the end of my bed talking to me. And I was maybe like 3 or 4, somewhere in that age range. And that was one experience that happened when I was very, very young that had me questioning a lot from right from the get-go. But w all through my preteen years, there was a lot of like poltergeist activity in the house that made it kind of hard to deny, right? And in the in-between, I was reading about all of this stuff. So when it kind of in what your sense of reality is informed by the experiences you have and how you choose to react to them.
Well said.
And I think for me, it was a long road. As I mentioned earlier, and as I mentioned that I don't really ever talk about too much, I did have some mental health difficulties in my early 20s. And I think a lot of that was a product of not handling stuff, not handling my own experiences in maybe the way I should have, you know.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you being open about that, because that's something that I've been open about. Just having, you know, I think more often than not, people, you know, like I said, people come to, you know, these kinds of schools of thought or interests because I don't know, there's something that they're trying to figure out. You know, and something that could oftentimes be something physical, some sort of quest type thing, but it always goes back to some degree, something inside yourself, some sort of, you know, Jungian hero's journey. And I think that, you know, the more we can just kind of admit that this is, you know, people trying to better themselves, best case scenario, you know, even when you look into esotericism and, you know, whatever else, it, if someone is not getting into this stuff to try and better themselves, you know, in a way that's good for them and altruistic, you know, something that sees results in one way or another, then, you know, everything, life is trial and error. So, you know, don't beat yourself up if you're not seeing good results, but I would urge you to take a healthier approach. Like, we have to have some sort of real goals in mind other than just spiraling down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the whole Chapel Perilous thing, you know. yeah, I think that in your books, it's kind of illustrated pretty well. There's a way
Thanks.
Of in the narrative form, which is just kind of, you suddenly find yourself being guided through this dense jungle with all kinds of weird monsters and UFOs in it, you know? And it's like, I think that when I first reached out to you after reading it, was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, I kind of put it the same way when I was younger. I wrote like a series of poems that that told a narrative story that was kind of really similar in a lot of ways, because it was, you know, a jungle island based on dream imagery from the time where I was having a lot of nightmares. And the book seemed to actually work for me as a sort of hypersigil to break me out of the routines that I was in at the time. So, yeah. I appreciate your book because it reminded me of that too, you know.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad you brought that up too, because the best way to put it, whenever I come across in conversation people's stories of like personal transcendentalism, you know, if you want to call that a small slice of a mystical experience or some sort of step in this, the stages of enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, that mystical insight where art links up with the things that are sort of bubbling inside us, and we are able to experience some sort of catharsis just through like shaking the kaleidoscope of our minds and our lives up in the right way and creating, you know, something like a sigil through your art and your intentions. That's such a beautiful, practical, and just like empirical approach to, you know, something like magic or mysticism. I think people think about something like love and money spells too often, and they forget like the, where it all comes from, you know, the existential implications of it all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the difference between, you know, magic for gain and like the great work, as it were.
Amen, man. Yeah, for sure.
And to get back to this, kind of is seems to be coming full circle to what we were talking about earlier, is as far as experiences go with what you might call Fortean phenomena, is that they are, when you're talking about the stories themselves, generally can be considered like visionary experiences, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And whether that's a fiction or a projection of some kind or material reality, that's doesn't make the vision any less impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got one last bit for you, and I think that this will keep us going for at least a little while longer, because this is definitely something to unpack. We've hinted at it a couple times in different ways. So what do you think, you know, like looking at the like the miracles of Fatima and other mass hysteria or like collective transcendentalists, whatever you want to call it, you know, a collective egregore, like a thought form. There seems to be this recurring theme of collective energy, people all getting on the same page, whether or not that page is even empirical, and somehow sharing in an experience that they might not otherwise, you know, be privy to. But like the fact that they're all kind of linking together in that sort of collective consciousness sort of way. What do you think about all that? Is that's also something that's hard for me. I don't know where it all fits in, and it just becomes part of that tangled web, but it seems to be sort of a core motif, like an outpouring of a lot of these kinds of Fortean conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. I think, though, that it's bigger and weirder than people give it credit for, right?
Agreed.
But people use small examples when they talk about this kind of stuff where, you know, UFOs are like some kind of egregoric output from people's belief in UFOs. I mean, I think Jung himself, when he wrote about flying saucers, was talking about them being, you know, an expression of anxieties from from the world following the Second World War, and comparing flying saucers to mandalas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you try to get too specific with it, I wonder sometimes if it's like missing the bigger picture, you know, not seeing the forest for the trees.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that people
try to fold Fatima into ufology, right?
They do, yeah. Especially since Jacques Vallée made the case,
and Fatima to Catholics is like a sacred miracle, a miraculous event, right? So it's kind of maybe they're both part of something bigger, right? So
yeah, that's where my mind tends to go, because you know Vallée also I can't remember what book it is, but might be Messengers of Deception, I'm not sure, but he also makes the case in the same book where he gets into Fatima about the Mormons and like Joseph Smith, and how some of that actually, he's like, hey, we, you know, we're just, I'm not saying that all of this is legitimate, but if we look at the classical accounts, all this stuff seems to fit a lot of like archetypal UFO phenomena. And in the same book, I believe, I'd have to fish it out, but I know there's a quote from Vallée where he talks about how he finds himself very like in the same kind of category as John Keel and Carl Jung, with slight differences. So he's definitely coming from that sort of mindset, but I don't know, like there seems to be, I don't know, this is to talk about a tangled slinky here, but UFOs, I think, I don't know where the ontology, I don't know where the trail of breadcrumbs ends on this one, but it does seem like you can lump it in, or that it runs along similar themes as like mystical phenomena. I don't really know how to take that in the long run. It definitely like muddies the waters in terms of ontology and trying to get to the root of these things.
Yeah, it does. And it makes it almost seem like a fool's errand.
Yeah. Yeah. And
could be the beginning of the fool's journey.
you know,
you mentioned breadcrumbs, and I've often said that trying to figure out this kind of material is basically following a trail of breadcrumbs that's going to lead you back to yourself.
Yeah. Damn. Very poetic. I like that a lot. Yeah. And this really is the fool's journey. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't go on it. I think if anything, that just means recognize that and sort of embrace the fact that, I don't know, sort of carving out your own path is in and of itself kind of foolish, and like you have to, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's all about the process. Interesting stuff. I don't know. I definitely don't think that UFOs and whatever beings that are associated with them should be deified. There's always that fine line, because I always seem to have myself coming back to what all seems to be stemming from similar phenomenology. And it you know, it's just like branching out further and further away from itself. But it doesn't seem like much good comes from the deification of them. And I definitely don't buy the whole ancient alien thing. You know, I think that you can obviously see recurring themes of this stuff throughout history for reasons, but, and if I think honestly, the whole ancient alien thing might be one of the biggest like nails in the coffin for me in terms of the nuts and bolts hypotheses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You would agree.
Oh yeah. I mean, the ancient astronaut theory it's become memeified as the absurdity that it is for a good reason these days, you know. But not the least of which we should probably mention is just that really does a disservice to humankind, and yeah, especially ancient humankind and the ingenuity of ancient peoples.
Hell yeah.
To me, it's much cooler to think that ancient civilizations had some kind of natural technology that allowed them to do things that we couldn't conceive of based on what we know of them to have had, you know, tapping into natural energy sources, you know. Imagine if there was something that didn't require any machinery to cut limestone blocks and levitate them into place.
Yeah.
I mean, you would call it magic, I guess, right? But imagine if there is some kind of natural force that allows for that to happen. That's just so long forgotten, you know? Why do we need to involve beings from Zeta Reticuli or wherever?
Agreed.
What's the point of that? I mean, some of it is racist too. There's always racial elements involved in this stuff, and but it's also selling humanity short in general. and also, the ETH has never ever made sense to me at all. It seems like the least likely scenario for why we would see lights in the sky and beings from other planets, you know.
Agreed. Yeah,
just what that implies, like the implications of that and the ramifications of it, where what would need be necessary for something to travel light years to get here, to what, teach us how to build pyramids or dismember a cow, like.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
Since you mentioned it, like, I mean, sacrificing cattle was, in a lot of those ancient cultures, was like ritual magic, you know.
So, no kidding. Yeah, that's another good point. Yeah. Another head scratcher there, that's for sure. So do you think how much of a degree do you think like emotions being sort of in that, like, in a more grandiose mystical outlook on like Jungian projection, how much of Fortean phenomena do you think is like at least in part catalyzed by something existential within the human being, whether it be like a crisis or an emotional quality or whatever? Because it especially seems when you look at like group hysteria, you know, something like, you know, even things that are hard to completely dismiss, even as a skeptic, you know, it's at least going to leave you head scratching, like, you know, Mothman and Point Pleasant and so many other examples you can find of groups steamrolling into this sort of thing that becomes larger than life in a way. How much of a role do you think that plays?
Well, I think attitude plays a lot more into it than anything else. But yeah, I mean, people's anxieties or beliefs or outrage. I think it's interesting to note that the last time we saw reports of mysterious clowns happening fairly often was back in 2016 during that election cycle.
Yeah.
A very crazy time for this country that, you know, led to even crazier times. And so much has happened in the past 6 to 8 years that it's hard to like remember a time back then. But I feel like there was so much anxiety and concern about what was going to happen with the 2016 election. I think it manifested in clowns. Like, I honestly do.
Yeah, I like that consideration there. And I'm glad you brought that up as well, because I know that you've mentioned you've been fascinated with like the recurring archetype of the phantom clown. And that would have been something great to add into the list of 14 odds and ends. So a little asterisk on there, whatever kind of detail you'd like to go into, tell us about like the 14 concept of a phantom clown.
Well, I mean, Lauren Coleman wrote about this back in the early 80s. And again, this was kind of near me is where it started. It was out toward Boston, Massachusetts. And there were reports of clowns trying to like abduct kids, basically. And these stories didn't make any sense because they should have been really easy to catch, right? They were described as being like in broken down vans that were all busted up and like should have stuck out like a sore thumb and also been pulled over just by virtue of the fact that like they had busted blinkers and headlights and things. So, but also they were clowns, like full grease paint and everything.
That is wild.
In some cases, only partially clothed. But what makes them phantom clowns in that respect is that they were seen, reported, and then never seen again in that area, right?
Wow.
Not captured on film even. So before this news really had a chance to travel, they started popping up in other places. They seemed to pop up like in Providence and then Pennsylvania and then way out in like Kansas, I think.
Really?
Lauren Coleman was putting these together because he was living in the Boston area for the original flap, but also because people sent him clippings from all over at the time, because he was already a known researcher. Mm-hmm. So he actually has like a whole like clown encounters scale that's sort of like the close encounters Hynek scale.
Wow, no kidding.
For what constitutes a phantom clown versus a stalking clown versus a killer clown. So
did you ever I'm sure you're familiar with the movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space then, huh?
Oh, hell yeah.
That's a great one. Classic. So have you or anyone you know ever seen any of these phantom clowns since you grew up in the area where they kind of stemmed from initially?
No, because I mean, and that's part of it is that, you know, it happened and then seemed to just go away, right? But it is something that recurs. And in recent years, I think it's down to the prevalence of the internet and people trying to go viral by hoaxing it, right?
Right.
And that's what a lot of like the 2016 ones seem to be. But but weird that they were all just kind of doing it at the same time.
I think it was definitely very strange.
Cultural, you know. I did have one person tell me a story about they went to school somewhere near Boston and there was a story about a creepy clown that lived in the woods near the school. And he was often seen just like eating cans of cat food and stuff, and it was in an area where like a small patch of wooded area that wasn't big enough to really hide somebody.
What the hell?
But he went down there with his buddy and they found like a little, like kind of shabby lean to kind of tent made down there, just filled with like empty cans of cat food.
So what the hell?
Found, but like found evidence of the area where the supposed clown lived.
Dude, that is fascinating. That is the stuff that gets my gears going. Like, yeah, what the hell is going on there? Right. Well, very interesting. As some cherries on top here, man. You mentioned Lauren Coleman and things. And that's a great name. I'd recommend for anyone going down the Fortean rabbit hole. Are there any other names that you would recommend? Like if someone is fascinated by this conversation and is trying to educate themselves a little further.
Oh yeah. I got like a big old Fortean library and my weird library here. So I've been collecting books for way too long and actually don't have room for all the books I have.
But, it's a great problem.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. Just need more bookshelves, that's all. I would recommend people, if you can ever just find old copies of like Fate magazine, those are always loaded to the brim with cool, weird stuff. I've been kind of on a Ted Holliday kick lately.
Oh, yes. Glad you brought him up.
Ted Holliday is well worth your time. Colin Wilson is one of my favorites, especially if you're interested in the occult but don't know where to look. His book, The Occult, A History, is a primer I always recommend to people. Charles Fort, Montague Summers. Have you ever read any Montague Summers?
I don't think I know that name, honestly.
Oh, the Reverend Montague Summers.
Yeah.
Air quotes.
Okay. Sounds like a character.
Oh, hell yeah. He was a... he referred to himself as a reverend, even though there's no record of him ever actually, you know, being ordained. But he wrote these voluminous books about werewolves and vampires and witches from the perspective of like the Catholic Church, basically. But he tirelessly researched them. And so, I mean, if you want some good vampire lore, especially now heading into the Halloween season, he's got two books on vampires, one on werewolves, and you know, there's other ones on witchcraft and witches in general. And there's a copy of the Malleus Maleficarum that was kind of translated and notated by him as well. So this is all like pre-1930s, I think. I think he died in the 30s or 40s.
That's some of my favorite work to read. I really like, I don't know if it's just I like the approach or the writing or just the fact that it's just far enough removed from where I am now, but still close enough. I really like that era of writing, like pre and mid and right after like World War II, like that, just the whole early 20th century is, yeah, there's something about it, man. I love so much basically what you just kind of talked about, like just going into the dingiest bookstores, used bookstores, and going right to the unexplainable section and trying to find the most obscure stuff I can. That's how you find some of the best gold.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And all sorts of stuff on those shelves isn't going to be on the internet.
Yeah.
I think people, like, I have this weird assumption that like, why even buy a book when I can just Google it? It's like, do you really think that it's all on the internet? I mean, the internet's cool, but there's,
sure, yeah. People also rely on things like Wikipedia, which is just kind of always going to change, you know?
Wait, you don't heavily rely on Wikipedia? Shit, I need to change my game here. I'm doing there's something some wrong.
Run podcasts on the back of Wikipedia. The bulk of the research is Wikipedia.
Oh, well, no.
I might have to listen to a different podcast then.
Yeah. Oops. Oh, man. Well, all right. So final question for now, and we are going to definitely get you back on the show before too long, because I feel like we just opened up so many rabbit holes that we can go down in the future. Like, so I think you are, not only are you just sort of like a bastion for Fortean investigation in my eyes, you know, you're very authentic and down to earth. You got a sense of humor, and you're an encyclopedia about a lot of this stuff. And you've come from hard times in the past. And as I said before, I think that more often than not, that kind of denotes like a well-traveled Fortean, you know, someone who has used these things and their interest in these things to better themselves. So what would you say to someone that is not just interested in this stuff, but having some sort of degree of like a dark night of the soul. Like what would you tell them on their hero's journey there?
Well, I guess to thine own self be true.
Well said.
It's one of those things that just really sounds easy until you try to do it or until you really consider what it is, right? I think a lot of this phenomena, if it's happening to you or if you're just fascinated by it, because there are a lot of people that are fascinated by this stuff and say, oh man, nothing's ever happened to me. Like, mm-hmm. Why doesn't it happen to me? I've never had these experiences. I'd like to, you know? And then maybe they're just already kind of where they need to be, right? I think so much of this has to do with just fate pushing you in one direction or another, which is why I really enjoy the term weird, because that's where it comes from. It originally just meant like fate.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
W-Y-R-D, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, being true to yourself and finding out what those inner truths mean to you is trusting your instincts. And I mean, it's not like I'm perfect or anything. I don't even think I'm all that great. But I don't want to be a guru here, but that as class, I feel like that's what I'm working toward, is being as authentic as I can be while still using a fake name on the internet.
Amen, man. Amen. I thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun, and it takes a certain kind of individual to be able to just sprint through so many different topics and keep it cogent and entertaining. I hope the listeners thought it was entertaining. I had a lot of fun. We'll definitely get you back on here before too long. Don't forget, to any listeners out there, you could check out apstrange.com. You can find this dude on Twitter. And you can check out his podcast, The Eternal Void, but with jazz. So, Mr. AP Strange, thank you so much, man. You take care.
Thank you.
All right. And to the listeners, we'll see you next time. This is Black Hoodie Alchemy. I'm Anthony Tyler. You take care as well.
Some say the universe is static, but everything's eventually bound to change. And right now we're intellectually bound to change. I'm sitting down trying to count the days, cause it ain't meant to be for temples to perpetually sound the same. My pen weeps to the key of this beat, the same key inside the subtle symphony of the street. When the winter's in its prime, the fact that life withers in its time by design's like a splinter in your mind. Peep that, keep track till you see the end. I speak these gems on beat with Earth's BPMs, and the voices of my ancestors sing it with me, with their sound waves and printed in the rings of a tree that's missing its leaves. It's all gray and white. Some folks pray to Christ to get right, but we all pay the price. A place where lost souls lead the cold way of life. Walking over the red snow, rocking coats made of ice, frozen. And as the evening came, I made peace with the pain in my freezing veins. I'm trying to make it through the sleet and the rain, patiently waiting for the season to change.
I wonder why we change with seasons. Personality switch can slay the meaning of a main demeanor. Quick as light can change us with the evening of a character. Just a matter of phases to mislead him. Then he's cold in a rainy day in springing. Then he falls into dreaming. Some are thinking he's crazy, hate to be on one. When to stop a question, it is not. The paper leaves him. He's a narrator who can't control the lyrics. He just fights it out with characters with different lives he's living that he writes about. Sometimes they take control and they surprise him. They don't like the vouch, but trying to find his routers like he's fighting in a Tyson bout. Once the lights are out, that's when they whisper to him softly with unforgettable words that he
even haunts me. We know the soul is costly, but once the money is summoned, it's a profit. Our values about to take autumn and flush them down the toilet. It's awful how money can spring in a picture like an author. And the cold and windy days can make departure in this empty margin. At night he tries to go to sleep, but he just twists and twirls. His voices in his head reminds him it's just him against the world. He hurls up out of bed, his eyes are burning red and shining bright. He's forced to scribble words, it doesn't matter what's the time at night. He sits up at his desk, he takes a breath, and then he counts to 10. He's feeling tense, and everything he's hearing, he just jots it in his notebook. Then he starts to lose his conscience and his oxygen. Then he notices the entities won't stop until he drops the 10. Drops the 10.
Some know winter, spring, summer, fall. Some know winter, spring, summer, fall. Shit is deep, cause each one can see sun. It wasn't from the seasons that see sun with seed sprung. It was the cold ones, the dark ones, the bleak ones, the harsh ones, the deep ones. Nigga, what?